Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, RMDs and other things that you got to do when you're in retirement. Let's talk about that today. And we've got a columnist from Kiplinger's personal finance section, known as Ask Him. Isn't that cool? Kimberly Langford is our guest today, and she has written extensively on a lot of very interesting and relevant topics for you as you think about your retirement and your investing and things just to be checking on. And a lot of what we're going to talk with Kimberly about are subjects that really pertain to the back nine of life, the things that come into play when you're retired and you start dealing with Medicare and RMDs and all of those things. So Kimberly has done the Ask Him columnist for Kiplinger's personal finance section, and she gets hundreds and hundreds of personal finance questions from readers every month. That's so cool. She's also written several books, Rescue Your Financial Life, and here's another one, The Insurance Maze, How You Can Save Money on Insurance and Still Get the Coverage You Need. And so she's been frequently featured as a financial expert on TV, radio, including NBC's Today Show, CNN, CNBC, and National Public Radio. So welcome, Kimberly Langford, to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Outstanding. Glad you're here. So let's dive right in. Required minimum distributions. You recently wrote about that, and you know, you got reader questions on this subject. Why do you think you're so much confused? And just is it just with these half this and half that? The age and how you do it. Why is there so much confusion for people about taking their RMDs?
Well, they certainly don't make it easy. You need to start taking your RMDs in the year when you turn age 70 and a half, not 70, but 70 and a half. And what adds an extra layer of complication is in that first year, you actually get an extension until April 1st of the following year for that first RMD. And then after that, you need to start taking your RMDs for the rest of your life, pretty much, December 31st of every year. So that first year is just really tricky, all these halves, all these extensions and things like that. But the key thing is once you start to get into the swing of things, this is something that's going to happen every year, and it's really the opportunity for the government to get some tax money on your tax-deferred retirement account.
Of course.
It's based on your life expectancy and the balance in your account the previous year. So the good news is you can start kind of figuring out good strategies for how to do this throughout the year because you know exactly what's coming.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, the half thing, I think, messes people up. If they could go back and change it and just say, hey, the year you turn 70, you got to start taking money out of these things.
That would be a great idea because, I mean, July ends up being a really key date, and people just need to keep in mind, is this when I'm 70 and a half,
right,
or is next year when I'm 70 and a half?
It's the year you turn 70 and a half.
Exactly. And the other key thing is making that first year's decision about whether or not to take your RMD by December 31st, or to take advantage of that grace period and go into April 1st of the following year. And one thing a lot of people don't think about is that if you delay until April 1st of the following year, you're going to have to take two RMDs that next year.
Yep.
And depending on what that does to your income, it could bump some of your income into the next tax bracket. If you're on Medicare, it could increase your Part B and Part D premiums if you go over a certain income level. And it could just have all kinds of ripple effects on your finances because it increases your adjusted gross income. So you really need, it might sound like you get, I get an extra few months, but you need to be really careful when making that first year's decision.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Beth wants me to ask you why they did the 70 and a half, and I'll give you my opinion, and I want you to tell me what you think the reason is for that, Kimberly. I think when the legislation was being passed, there were some congressmen who did not want this rule to go into effect. He or she wanted extra time, or maybe it was a budget reconciliation negotiation point or something, but it's something off the wall. It doesn't make sense.
I really do need to look into it sometime because I am curious, and I really don't have any idea because, and you know, I mean, also with the with IRAs and penalties, that's 59 and a half. So
right,
there
right.
could be several half-year things. That would be a really good idea for me to look into sometime.
I think it's just because it was all half thought out. How about that?
Well,
you know, and you make a good point about the RMDs, and I'm really glad that you are bringing this into focus, Kimberly, because the reality is a lot of people just, they get a little bit hung up or tripped up on some of this. You know, the truth is, you do, as you said, and as a CPA, I certainly am focused on this, and we talk a lot about it with our clients. We don't want to pay any tax before we have to, but sometimes it makes sense to take RMDs or take withdrawals from IRAs and 401ks and the other qualified accounts, to take them before you have to, or even take more than you're required because of your individual tax situation. So everything we're talking about, of course, you know, beyond the minimum in terms of the amount or accelerating when you start, totally depends on the person's situation.
And that is a great idea to start thinking about this in advance. I mean, for those several years before you turn age 70 and a half, start thinking about, ooh, maybe I could convert some of the money from a traditional IRA to a Roth, for example. And then you can really control, have a lot more control over the tax ramifications. So say, for example, you know, there could be several thousand dollars of income you could have in addition to what you have now and still remain in the same tax bracket. Well, you may want to take some of that, you know, figure out what that number would be and transfer some of that money from a traditional IRA to a Roth. And in that case, you'll end up paying taxes on it that year, but, you know, it may not end up, you know, bumping some of the money into the next tax bracket, or it may end up helping you stay below the cutoff for the high income surcharge for Medicare, which, by the way, is if your adjusted gross income plus tax-exempt interest income is more than $85,000 if you're single or $170,000 if you're married filing jointly, then you have to pay an extra amount for your Medicare Part B and Part D. So once you start to hit those RMDs and you have to start taking those withdrawals, you may think, oh, you know, I'm not working. My income is way below that. But if you have a lot of money that's been building up in tax-deferred accounts like 401ks and traditional IRAs, you could end up getting bumped to that extra level. So think about making some conversions, just maybe some partial conversions every year from age, you know, 60 to 70, and then you'll have less money in that tax-deferred account by the time you have to start taking those RMDs. You can reduce that amount and keep your income below some of these cutoffs.
Well put, Kimberly. Yeah, and on that point about the, you know, making those conversions, you know, you can look at your tax bracket where your income is during that period of time. And it may be that, you know, a lot of times I tell people what we have to figure out is what is your threshold for pain? You know, how much of a tax bracket are you willing to accept? And we can't ignore what our expectations may be about either future income in retirement or what somebody's expectations are about future taxation, which, of course, you know, is not written and we don't know what it's going to be 10 years out. But those things affect it as well, because it might be that somebody says, you know what, I'm willing to pay 15%. I'm willing to go up to a 15% or 20 or 25% bracket, and I want to get as much as I can converted so that on the back end, I can avoid taxes completely.
And it does. It then gives you that, you know, anything that's been converted to that Roth gives you an extra pot of money that's not going to be subject to RMDs, that you can use for retirement income, is not going to add to your adjusted gross income. I mean, it really gives you, we call it tax diversification. So if you have a lot of money in tax-deferred accounts, to have some money in some of these tax-free accounts. Maybe it's also, you know, contributing some money to a Roth IRA if you qualify, or to a Roth version of a 401k if that's an option. So you'll be able to take some of your retirement withdrawals tax-free that can help keep your income below some of these levels that have the domino effect on everything else.
You're so right. And real quick on the Roth, and we need to go to a break. The Roth, you know, there's a little bit of confusion here as well. You know, the Roth conversion, a person doesn't have to have taxable income to make a conversion.
That's exactly right. And I do get a lot of questions from readers about that because, you know, in order to make Roth or traditional IRA contributions, you need to have earned income. But you do
earned
not have
income.
To have earned income in order to be able to make the conversion. And on the flip side, you don't have to be below a certain income level either. Anyone can make the conversion. You just need to think about the impact on your tax situation, because it will be taxable.
There you go. Ask him. That's why she's here, so we can ask him. Kimberly Lankford, ladies and gentlemen, columnist for Kiplinger Personal Finance. A lot of great columns, articles, information, answer reader questions over on Kiplinger.com. And we'll grab a break and we'll be right back with Kim. Stay right there.
Hello, this is Brenda Campbell, General Manager with Volusia Memorial Park and Funeral Home. We are committed to helping you with compassionate, professional, and personal service. When it comes to pre-planning for yourself or someone you love, a Dignity Memorial Provider is the name you can trust for all your funeral, cremation, cemetery, and memorial service needs. Recording them and sharing them with your loved ones will help ensure your final arrangements will be what you want, easing the burden on your family and friends. We can be reached at 386-673-5373 or our website, VolusiaMemorialFunerals.com. Volusia Memorial Funeral Home in Port Orange and Ormond Beach. Life well celebrated.
The Rice and Rose Law Firm is celebrating 30 years of service in Volusia and Flagler counties. I'm Paul Rice, president and managing partner of Rice and Rose. The Rice and Rose Law Firm has a department dedicated to estate planning, wills, trusts, and probate. We also provide legal guidance if you need a power of attorney, living will, or health care surrogate. Contact the Rice and Rose Law Firm at our Daytona Beach office at 257-1222 or visit our website at ricerosenlaw.com.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dan Drake. My staff and I have enjoyed delivering excellent, lasting dental care to countless patients for many years. We are a modern dental practice offering a full range of services, including cosmetic, implant, Invisalign, and general dentistry. Additionally, I am one of only a few dentists licensed to perform IV sedation, sleep dentistry to help those of you who are anxious. My belief and commitment is to deliver outstanding dental care and positive patient experiences. We look forward to serving you. If you have a dental question or concern, don't hesitate to call us at 386-673-1611 or visit AtlanticDentists.com.
Hi, this is David Holland. I've been going to Dr. Drake's office for over 20 years. I trust them, and you can too.
Have you considered an annuity as part of your retirement plan? Did you know that over the past several years, Americans put trillions of dollars into annuities? But despite their popularity, many people aren't sure about annuities. Why? Because annuities have been attacked for decades by financial folks who offer competing products or services. A lot of money is at stake, so some financial firms who only offer investments don't want you to consider an annuity. Get the facts. Find out about this valuable financial resource. Call Holland Financial today and get your free copy of Annuities as Part of Your Retirement Plan at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
All right, we're back. Ask Kim, and we did, and she's here to talk with us. Kimberly Langford, ladies and gentlemen, columnist for Kiplinger's personal finance section, and she's got a website, kiplinger.com, that everybody goes to and gets great information, including asking Kim questions. And we're talking about RMDs and all of that good stuff. And before we leave RMDs, you know, we've got to hit this point, then we can get into things about Medicare and other things as well, Kim, is when we do the RMDs, there's also some confusion out there among people about how they calculate their RMDs in terms of the various accounts. If they've got 401ks, let's first address that. If somebody's still employed, and let's say they've got a 401k and they've got an IRA, they hit 70 and a half, what do they have to do?
Well, generally, if you're still employed at 70 and a half, you don't need to take RMDs from the 401k at your current employer. So
right.
If you have previous 401ks from previous employers, you do have to start taking RMDs. And there is a special exception if you're a partial owner of the company.
Right.
But in general, that one RMD at your current job, you don't need to take that 401k, you don't need to take RMDs from, but you still do have to start taking your RMDs from your IRAs. And I get a lot, it seems like a lot of people are working into their 70s these
right.
days.
Right, good for
I
them.
I get a lot of questions from people who are wondering about these rules.
Well, and when we do that, I'm glad you clarified that because people do have a lot of questions about this. So we have to take it. We don't have to take our RMDs from our current 401k. Now, for the other 401ks and IRAs, we have to take. Now, here's a question sometimes people get tripped up on. As it relates to IRAs, the IRS really doesn't care where you draw it from as long as you draw enough. If you've got 15 IRAs or one, as long as you take the proper percentage out of the total amount that's in IRAs, they're good. They don't care which account you take it out of.
That's correct. And it is. It's interesting. The calculation is very different for IRAs than it is for 401ks. Like you said, for IRAs, you end up calculating how much you're required to withdraw from each of your IRA accounts separately, but then you get that add up, that total amount, and you can take that from one or any portion of the IRAs. It doesn't have to be proportional across all of your IRAs. So you can think about, ooh, maybe I have some investments that I don't want to have to withdraw from or take money from now. I'll keep all that money in that IRA, but then I have some money that may be in, a stable or maybe in a fixed account or something like that. Maybe I'll take some of the money from that IRA. And that's how the IRAs work. 401ks is opposite of that. 401ks, you need to calculate the RMD separately for each 401k account you have and take that money separately from each 401k account. So if you still have several old 401ks from former employers, you need to take an RMD from each of those accounts. Now, the key thing is your 401k administrator can generally help you figure out what you need to take, and especially for 401k, since you need to take it from that account, it's really clear-cut. But for IRAs, you need to do that calculation across all the different IRA accounts that you have, traditional IRA accounts,
right.
Not Roth IRAs.
Right.
And your administrator can help you with that calculation, but in the end, it's up to you to figure out which accounts to tap for that money.
Well, Beth is ready to jump out of a window hearing all that here in the studio, Kim. So I'm going to, and for our listeners, let me make this easy. This is exactly why you don't leave those old 401k plans behind. You can roll all of them. If you've got 401ks, 457s, TSAs, all that jazz can be rolled in an IRA. You can bring it all together, and then you can make your single withdrawal, if appropriate, from that one IRA, or get it into all of that and make it easier. And you know, the other point you made, Kim, which is actually one that we do a lot of in the financial planning work my firm does, is we really are careful about where we draw the RMD. So we typically will have an account that is much more stable or guaranteed and can't lose anything, have it to where it is the place where we draw our RMDs for everything, and then let the other accounts that we're not drawing from be the things that are a little bit more growth-oriented.
And that is such a great strategy. And a lot of people are just so kind of tripped up in the whole calculations of the RMDs that they don't think about that next level, that, you know, try to put some money aside into that fixed account for, you know, several years before you have to take your RMD, so it's ready to go. And then you can let the other investments grow for the future.
Well put. Well, exactly, because if we have a repeat of 2008 when the market was down 40% and a lot of people's accounts were down much more than that, you've got to take an RMD based on the beginning of the year value. Guess what? You're going to be, if your RMD, say, is $4,000, well, it's really costing you $8,000 because you're having to take it out while your account's down. That's no fun.
You don't want to be forced to have to do that.
Mm-mm. Don't do that. All right. Well, that's very helpful, I think, for people to understand those things, Kim, and I'm glad we could talk about that. Let's jump over into another really important issue or area for people who are retiring, and that is the question about when you get to this magical age of 65, and of course, 65 is the new, what is it? 65 is the new 45? You're supposed to take 20 years off?
Something like that,
okay.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people now, they're like, hey, wait, I'm 65. So they've got to do some things. So let's kind of run through some of the big things that they need to make sure that they do.
Well, they need to make a key decision about Medicare. And you are eligible to sign up for Medicare anywhere from 3 months before to 3 months after the month you turn 65. So in that 65th year, you need to make a decision about Medicare. Now, I'm not saying you need to sign up for Medicare, because I get a lot of questions from readers, these people who are still working at 70 or still working at 65. And a lot of people who are still working may still have employer health coverage through at their job and are asking whether they need to pay for Medicare. Well, they may or may not, depending on several very complicated factors. And one of them is, first of all, if you have health insurance coverage through your current employer, not retiree coverage, because then you really should sign up for Medicare, but if you have it through your current employer, then you need to figure out, well, what is the size of my employer? If your employer is more than 20 people, then you may not have to sign up for Medicare. Your employer coverage can be primary coverage, and you can just keep that and just make sure that you sign up for Medicare within 8 months of finally losing your employer coverage when you finally do leave your job. If your employer is less than 20 people, you may have to sign up for Medicare. And this is where you really need to talk to your employer about what a specific plan is like. But you may be required to sign up for Medicare because your employer's coverage then may shift to be secondary, filling in the gap for Medicare.
That's a huge one.
And the other key thing is Medicare Part A is free for most people who have, you know, been in the system, been paying in the system for years and years. But if you are contributing to a health savings account through your employer, you may not want to sign up for Part A if you have that option of not signing up in order to be able to continue to contribute, you know, pre-tax money that you can then access tax-free for health care expenses to your HSA. Otherwise, if you don't have that, a lot of people do sign up for Part A as soon as they're eligible, even if they do have employer coverage because it's providing free coverage. Part B has a cost, so that's a more difficult decision. But really keep in mind, if you have a high deductible health insurance plan, you're contributing to an HSA, and especially if your employer is taking in some money to that HSA, you may want to think about delaying signing up for Part A and Part B while you have that employer coverage, as long as you qualify. And that's where you need to be really careful to make sure that your plan is going to be considered primary. You're not going to be stuck with any penalties. Talk with your HR department about that.
Well put, Kim. Very good. Kimberly Langford, ladies and gentlemen, columnist for Kiplinger Personal Finance, Kiplinger.com. And she's also written a number of books, including Rescue Your Financial Life. Stay right there. We'll be right back with Kimberly.
Hi, I'm Teresa Ram with the Volusia Flagler YMCA. Our YMCA has 6 locations to help your family reach their health and fitness goals. The WISE Aquatics program is designed to teach personal water safety, stroke development, water sports, games, rescue, and personal growth skills. All participants are taught by our trained and certified YMCA aquatic instructors. For more information on how your YMCA can help with your health and wellness goals, check out www.vfymca.org.
Hello, this is David Holland. You already know from listening to this program that I'm very careful about my financial advice. It will come as no surprise then that I feel the same way about my other recommendations. If you love traditional, authentic Greek food as much as I do, then there's just one place to go, the Greek Town Taverna at 150 North Nova Road in Ormond Beach. It's just around the corner from my office, so you'll see me there for lunch at least a couple times a week. They've got stuffed grape leaves, gyros, lamb chops, octopus, and baklava. You can find all of these wonderful homemade Greek favorites every day of the week. They offer a wide variety of wine and beer to pair with your meal as well. Visit GreekTownTaverna.com or call 386-944-9526 for more information. I'll see you there.
Done right, done on time, or it's free. Hi, this is Steve Tassinelli, and I'm a CPA with Holland Tax and Accounting Services. Our tax team holds the same values our clients have trusted for almost 20 years at Holland Financial. We have the expertise to help you manage your financial priorities year-round, not just during tax season. Whether you're an individual or a business, you can rely on Holland Tax for personalized service and attention to detail. Call 386-671-7526 to have your taxes done right, done on time, or it's free. That's 386-671-7526.
All right, back with Kimberly Langford, ladies and gentlemen, and we're talking about the 7 important financial moves if you've turned 65 in 2016, which was a recent column from Kimberly's work over at Kiplinger's Personal Finance and Ask Kim on the website, kiplinger.com. So next, I know that we need to be thinking about Social Security and getting that started. And there's still, that, you know, I know that they've made a lot of changes with Social Security and the way you can elect different strategies, but there's still the importance, there's still the opportunity to make some decisions that will make the most of Social Security for your individual situation. And so people still need to focus on that, don't they, Kim?
And I was going to say, that is another key decision to make at 65, and there are a lot of misconceptions because, you know, for years and years, the full retirement age for Social Security was 65, but it's not anymore. If you were born from 1943 through 1954, your full retirement age is 66. And if you sign up for Social Security at 65, which you can, you will get a reduced benefit for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need, starting at age 62, to start making some decisions about when you want to take Social Security. You can take it as early as age 62, but you will have a reduced benefit based on the number of years until your full retirement age, which is 66. So any decisions you make about Social Security before then, you may need the money, but just keep in mind, and you can use calculators at socialsecurity.gov, and a lot of financial planners have great calculators too, that can show you how it will impact your benefit if you take Social Security early. Also, keep in mind, if you're one of those people who is still working at 65, that any earnings that you have before that full retirement age, which is 66, they could impact your Social Security benefit. And you may have a reduced benefit based on your work if you earn more than a certain amount of income. So really keep that in mind, that you may want to wait till 66. And, in fact, you can wait beyond 66. You can wait up until age 70. To start taking your benefits, and your benefits actually from 66 to 70 will increase, if you start from 66 to 70, will increase by 8% for every year you wait until age 70. So you just need to do some calculations. Do I need the money now, or do I want the higher lifetime income but starting later? And that's going to make a big difference in your retirement income coming in for those, you know, next 20 years or so.
Absolutely. And again, you're right, Kim. It does depend if they are able to wait. You know, a lot of people can't wait, or they have their circumstances are such that they need to start earlier, but it doesn't make sense in a lot of cases to take it if you are before your normal retirement age, and that continues to, you know, for people, the older, as we go forward, that age is going up now at 66 in so many months. For me, at 67, We'll see if it's if it stays 67, but the point is it is individualized, and people have to think about that. Now, while we're on the front end of this, and we've just got a couple minutes left to talk about this, Kim, is while we're on the front end of this, though, maybe we're in kind of this crunch zone, and people are going, hey, I need to save more for retirement. When they get over 50, that opens up the opportunity to pack more into 401ks and other types of retirement vehicles to save more and get more working for them.
That is correct. And that is the key age. Age 50 is when you can start making catch-up contributions. And for a lot of families, this is perfect timing. They may have sent their kids through college. They may, you know, be closer to paying off their mortgage. And they may have a little bit, and they may be earning a bit more than they did a while back and can afford to set aside more for retirement. If you're 50 or older, any time in 2016, and this is, you know, you don't have to wait till your birthday, just any time this year, you can contribute an extra $1,000 to your IRA and an extra $6,000 to your 401k. And so that means you can contribute up to $6,500 to your IRAs or $24,000 to 401ks. And just adding those catch-up contributions for those, you know, those last several years, starting, you know, when you're 50 up until, you know, you're 65 or so, can really make a big difference in your retirement savings and really help kind of you make that final push, make a big difference.
That's good. Yes, yeah, the final push to get across the end zone. So make sure everybody heard you correctly. You said the year you turn 50, so you could actually start making contributions at a greater level starting in January?
That's exactly right. And that's a key thing. A lot of people ask me, you know, things like Medicare are based on your actual birth month, but this is based on your age at the end of the year, so you can do it any time now.
There you go. That's excellent. Well, listen, we got to about half of what we plan to talk about, Kim, but there's so much here. We'll have to have you come back and do it again, and I really appreciate you being with us. Kimberly Langford, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. Kiplinger Personal Finance section, Ask Kim, Kiplinger.com. And, of course, Kim's written several books, Rescue Your Financial Life, one of the more recent ones. Kim, thank you so much for doing this with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.